This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Kirsty Wright. Still fever-free and bathed in sunshine, at least on the outside. How about you?
Yeah, you know what? We're bathed in sunshine here today as well, which definitely makes a difference. I feel very spoiled. May the 5th, broken the golden podcast rule of saying the date and putting it, you know, losing evergreen content or whatever. But yes, no, sunny in Adelaide today.
Yeah, we are back in the office this week. So we were just talking about this pre-tape roll, how your life and my corona life and your corona life are totally different. So I went to the office yesterday. I had gone in on the weekend and I had measured 2 meters between every desk sideways and horizontally or any direction. I put a masking tape X marks the spot on where the chair needed to be, took away all the other chairs and moved all the computers around. And so that we had 8 people return to the office yesterday out of our full team of 15. And it was quite the experience, I had to say. So, yes.
And Nikki, you were telling me that you're wearing a mask, but just when you get up to go to the printer, the water bottle or the kitchen, right?
Yeah. So to go to a meeting room or to go to the bathroom or the printer, which I do all the time because I'm in admin and my life is printing things, or being in the printer area, you know, looking through all the stuff. That's what we're doing. And, you know, so it's just like a lot of cars here. I posted a photo on my Instagram the other day, have a mask hanging from the rear vision mirror, you know, so you can put one on to go into the supermarket. Mm. And so now I've got one hanging from my computer as well. Just so it reminds me when I stand up and walk around that I'm going to just whack that on. So, you know, a mask for every occasion, a bit like a scrunchie. Mm. And, you know, they're the cloth triple layer masks, which you can put an insert in. So I have inserts in there that I have to remember to take out when I wash them because, of course, otherwise it's like having a tissue in the washing
machine.
Nice,
yeah.
And that's not fun for anyone.
No. Okay, Nikki, let's move on to our 4 fat expat questions. Nikki, what does one wear to a virtual graduation ceremony? I have just received my invite to Henry's, my youngest, year 8 virtual graduation.
So it's such a great question. Like it's going to be just more than hair and makeup, right? And you might possibly need, I don't know, a pant or a skirt and a shoe. And like, how does that work in countries when there are no shoes inside? Do you have to be on inside, like, so you can watch it on the telly, like, rather than outside? And will it Zoom to Henry Hot Dog when it's his turn to graduate? Will they give awards? Will there be a global choir? Will everyone be able to mute themselves effectively? So many questions, Kirsty.
Okay, I can answer a couple of those for you. It is going to be broadcast on YouTube, so there's no liveness about it, no interactions, no need for a Zoom, for a mute button. So we've been told that, you know, at 12 p.m. on such and such a day, we'll be able to sit down and watch the graduation. What they've asked for from Henry is a video of him walking towards a camera as if he's accepting something.
Awesome. Is that in case he wins an award?
No, I gather they get everyone gets their graduation.
Oh, like a certificate. Yeah, all right.
Now, I'm guessing those who get awards, they'll just reuse that piece of film. And then I would take the stab that the people that would usually make a speech will make their speech, so there'll be a student that, you know, makes it for the year and whatever. What they have said they're going to do is do the virtual walk from the middle school to the high school, which is what they usually do, like after the ceremony, you know, to say that you've graduated from middle school to high school. So I imagine some, you know, zany teacher's going to walk us across and give us a commentary of that. But Nikki, it just brings so many things. Like, this is my 4th, 8th grade graduation, but my first virtual one. But there have been many times I've probably wished I could be in a virtual one and hit the fast forward button.
Right. So you don't have to dress up because it's not going to come to you, the camera. No. But for the walk up to the camera, like, are you going to make Henry dress up for that? Like, he's going to have to be in fancy clothes?
I've told him that he probably needs to wear a shirt. Press a chino. A shirt with a collar, and we will probably press a chino, I imagine. He's not digging it at all. He doesn't understand why we just can't send a picture of him and that they can just flash to the picture. He's happy with that. He said that no one's doing it, which is the language of every 13-year-old, yeah. Is that no one else is doing it. Yeah, I feel for him because he should be there and he should be able to do it. He tells me this wasn't what he was looking forward to, like this wasn't the bit of, you know, graduating from year eight that he was looking forward to. The ceremony wasn't high on the list, but he was looking forward to that last week more so, you know, where you're hanging out and you're signing each other's books and you're just having fun. So I think for him it's just even sadder, you know, that he'll get to see those people online, but he won't get to, you know, interact with them in any way. So, and yes, we have threatened him, as in his siblings have threatened him, that they're thinking of getting their suits and formal dresses out and getting dressed up for the occasion and doing it. And we will, I think what we'll do is we will choose one of our Friday night drinks, you know, to play it and watch it. We'll put it on the big telly and, you know, cheer for him when it's his name comes up.
Right. So you're not going to attend live.
Well, is anybody?
Well, that's the question, yeah. Isn't it? So obviously there's a lot of pre-production involved.
Yes.
So if you did attend live, you might be able to, like, fast forward through the boring bits.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, there is no such thing as attending live, is it? It's a video that's just up on YouTube. So,
well, there is YouTube live, so maybe it's live and then you can watch repeats.
I hadn't even thought about that, Nikki. Is there? I've never watched anything live.
Yeah, don't discount
it. I haven't watched anything live on YouTube.
Is it not like Twitch and things like that? Now I might be, someone will tell us if you can't watch YouTube live, but I've got a feeling that it's, okay, if it's going to be on YouTube, maybe it's all pre-recorded. I will Google that later and
that would make more
please,
sense.
No,
that would make more sense because I couldn't work out why they said you have to be there at 12 p.m., you know, to watch it. So that would make a lot more sense. Ah, well, there you go. I'm lost in the technology.
Oh, yeah, no, there is a YouTube live, so it does exist. Who knows? Oh, so many questions. Now, next podcast, will you be able to answer any of them or will we have to wait a couple of weeks for this? When's this event occurring?
Okay, so graduation is May 21st, which happens to be the last day of school, so well worth the celebration. So I've just decided, yes, that will work very well with the timing, et cetera, because it'll be an evening, so we'll be able to glam up and watch it on the big telly. And, yes, they'll be dressing up.
Well, that's the other thing, because time zone-wise, can everyone, like everyone who's flown home to their home countries, it must be a terrible time zone for some people.
But, yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. I guess those people watch the recorded one later on. That's a few weeks away, so I'll keep you posted.
So we'd like to have an update from that and maybe a family photo to share with the gang about his our graduation ceremony. Okay, Kirsty, what have you ticked off in COVID-19 bingo? I read an article this week about new trends and micro trends emerging from our current situation globally. And some of them I hadn't heard of at all, but some of them were like, oh, yeah, tick, tick, tick. So one of the thing was, have you baked your own bread from scratch?
Tick.
Okay. Yes. Me, I've done hot cross buns, so not bread, but okay. Have you been in a TikTok video?
No, not through lack of trying either. No one will do one with me. I'm desperate to do one, but no one.
All my friends are doing them with their kids, and I say to my daughter, do you want me to be in a TikTok video? The latest one she, her friend did with her mother, they were in towels with towels on their heads and towels around their chest doing a song.
Mamma
Mia. And I said, what about this? No, it wasn't Mamma Mia. I said, what about this? She said, are you kidding? Okay, have you been to a Zoom party with friends?
Yes. Tick.
Okay. Have you been to a virtual birthday party?
No, I haven't. And okay. We don't hit the birthday scene in our house for a few weeks yet, and then we go hard. But I don't think we'll be having virtual birthday parties. What about you, Nikki? You've got a birthday coming up. Are you ready to have your virtual birthday party?
No, I am not. And I just told some people this week that I will not be participating in anything virtually. I'm prepared to put off my birthday for a year, 3 months, 4 months, whatever it takes. But I want to stand in a room with people and drink things and maybe touch them.
Yes. That's what now, I'm going if you with. Had if you had a 5-year-old, would you be hosting a virtual birthday party?
Maybe. I mean, I didn't always have birthday parties for my kids, but I see a lot of like really fun online stuff going on. And you know, if I was a Pinterest mum and I had a kid, a younger kid, then maybe I might do that. Luckily, we've got a September teen birthday here, so I don't think there'll be anything virtual, but I don't know what will happen.
See, here's the thing. Have expats been holding virtual birthday parties for years anyway?
No. I mean, no, they haven't we
been having Skype sync, like get grandma and granddad on the phone and cut the birthday cake with everybody watching? Haven't we been doing
that? Well, yes. Yes, we have. We actually have, but we haven't called it the same thing. Yes. And so now the rest of the world's found it. They've formalized it. They've given it a name and they think they're doing it better than we've ever done
it.
But we were obviously the pioneers, experts. Experts were the pioneers once Skype happened, you know, once the grandparents weren't upside down all the time.
Yeah.
Then yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happened. You're right. Have you made your own sourdough starter?
No, but I did borrow some from the local restaurant.
No.
Does it count if someone brought it to my house as a gift?
Yes, counts. Have you done a makeover of a cupboard, a room, or a garage?
Yes, but you know me. That's me on a normal weekend.
Have you participated in one of these chain emails about? Have you had them?
No.
Oh, dear.
Do they exist? I thought they died in 2002.
I tell you, I got my first one and I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm just not
what
even.
What is it? Are they like the old style?
They are old. Well, they're not like you're going to die if you don't afford this or, you know, something's going to happen to your cat. But they are the ones where, you know, like, forward this email, like send your favorite recipe to 5 people at the top of this list. And if the chain keeps going, then you'll get like 60 recipes or something, you know. And I don't do chain emails, but you know, this is a good one and I've got extra time on my hands and blah, 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 blah. Like it's a whole new spiel. And I've had it more than once and people, I've broken the chain. I'm really sorry.
Yes,
I hope other people got the recipes. It just really, I just, no, I'm not.
No, technology's moved past that. We don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, but it's back. I bet there are some people listening to this nodding their head going, yep, I've had one of them chain emails. Yeah, and there's another one about poems. Send your favorite poem on, you know, a bit of mindfulness / mental health things. Okay, have you done a 10-day photo challenge? When you accidentally like someone's.
I have seen them. Yes, I have seen them. And I got confused at the beginning because, you know, the first ones came out and everyone just does the challenge accepted and post their picture. And I got really confused because we started off, we had people posting photos from 10 years ago, right? Mm. Like, and then all of a sudden people were posting photos of them as like 8-year-olds. And I was thinking, oh, come on, mate. That wasn't 10 years ago. And I've seen, you know, the whole, and now I'm going to share my 10 favorite albums and my 10 favorite books and my 10 favorite. I don't mind them. They don't annoy me. But the chain email would, though.
Have you been tagged for them? So sometimes when you're not looking and you like a photo because you think, oh, that's a cute photo, someone will send you a message and say,
oh, no.
You liked my photo. You're it. You are now required to do this thing for 10 days. Don't like anyone's photos anymore.
Don't like them.
And have you done an online quiz night?
No, I haven't, but I'd like to. I'd really like to do that. I love quiz nights. Maybe I need to get off my bum and organise it rather than wait for someone to invite me. But I would love an online quiz night. I love quiz nights at the pub. I really
Too.
Yeah.
And this is – so because you're in Australia and you're so COVID on top of things, you might not have done this, but made your own mask.
No, not yet. No. And I don't want to get too cocky about it because, you know, as we all know, we haven't hit winter here yet. But, no, we are 13 days of no new cases and two children back at school. So I would hope that if we can get through another 10 days of no new cases that we're sitting okay until the country starts opening up a bit and then we'll be bound to have cases again. And, yeah, so no, I haven't made a mask yet. I was in a shop yesterday and I saw they were selling, you know, packs of 10 masks and hand sanitizer because, of course, there's mountains of that stuff everywhere now because we haven't had the emergency, right? We've reached that status where we're now completely resourced and restocked and whatever. And I did think, oh, am I really going to regret not grabbing these while they're here? But I didn't. I do. I guess that tells you where my state of mind is. I'm trusting of the system right now.
Yeah. And so I thought all those things were pretty universal. It didn't have on there, have you done a session with Coach Joe? But neither of us have young kids, but I would guess that pretty much, if that wasn't an article about adults, that would have been on there because everyone I know with a 12 and under or, you know, 10 and under, Coach Joe's on their daily schedule. Yes. I thought that was kind of pretty global. Is there anything that you think is niche to Australia, like something Australians do in ISO that other countries maybe have done? I know there's the DJ, the Friday night dance party situation.
Yes, that is big. The hot dub time machine, he is huge. And I would say that most of my friends have done a session with him, whether they've had their kids involved or not, just for a bit of fun on a Saturday night. So, yeah, that's a really good one. I think there's been a hell of a lot more exercise done than there has been in the past. I've noticed that is the one thing that everybody does around me is everybody's out walking or riding or running or climbing or paddle boarding or, you know, whatever they can do. But no, apart from that, I think it's all pretty much the same of Zooms and, you know, that sort of thing.
Anyway, I thought it was a bit of fun.
That's excellent. Thank you. Now, Nikki, is there anyone out there who still thinks they're going home for the summer? And I should say, when I say home for the summer, I'm doing the universal language of expat that means summer comes between June and September. But do people still think they are going to go home?
Apparently, yes, if you believe Facebook posts about airlines and tickets and travel. I mean, I don't know how you could. If you're a long away expat, if you're a sub-European expat, there's probably a possibility that could happen. I mean, you can always go to your home country. So, and within Europe, that's not too traumatic. And when you return, if you just factor in your 2 weeks quarantine on return, that could work. But I don't know. I just don't think people are really thinking it through. I think that the planners who've had all their Easter breaks and their Chinese New Year and their spring breaks cancelled are panicking about, well, what if they cancel summer? So we have to talk about it first. I'm not sure. What do you think, Kirsty?
I think if you're going home for the summer, you are perhaps prepared not to come back because I think if there are people that are going home, they must have in the back of their minds, hey, I might not get back. So if you were coming back to Australia, and I did see a post in a local Doha group for Australians and New Zealanders, and I saw someone had written about travelling back into Melbourne and how they'd made it back to Melbourne on Qatar Airways. This was only a couple of days ago, and I remember thinking, wow, you know, like that's big. So I'm guessing if you're going home for the summer, number one, you're probably forking out a lot of money to go home.
Yeah, it's not be cheaping.
No. And so you're planning on doing that. Then you're obviously planning on doing quarantine in a hotel room with your children or with your significant other or completely alone. I tell you
more
what.
More time alone with your significant other.
What I did see the other day was some Australian expats from India who flew back into Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, and their 14 days was just up yesterday. And I tell you what, it wasn't bad being an Australian expat flying into Adelaide from India. You stayed at the Pullman, which is a very nice hotel, but they had a party for them, Nikki, where the Premier went.
What?
Yes.
Say congratulations.
It was so Australian. They had a comedian doing, you know, stand-up. They had a dance party. They all got out on their balconies and danced. The Premier came. The chief medical officer came, Nicola Sturgeon, who's become just a household name in South Australia now. And she'd be going well to be our next Premier. I think have chief medical officers of all locations suddenly become the go-to people? Like we all know the names and who they are.
Yeah, I've learned the names of a whole lot of people that I never knew, German names, yeah.
So I noticed all of those people said how well they'd been looked after and how great it was, you know, to be out, but how the food was great, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, look, I'm in a different situation that I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. I'm now on the flip side of that where I panic about, well, what happens when we need to go back? It's a long way and, you know, Qatar at the moment, I think yesterday they had 600 new cases. Maybe the day before that it was 900 new cases. And, Nikki, just when I left Qatar, they went from 14 cases in one day to 248 by the time I'd arrived. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that you flew into Australia and everyone was really paranoid about you. And I said to you, there are less cases in Qatar than there are in Australia and they're having a go at you for like flying in from there.
Well, Qatar's definitely outdone them. But I mean, in Qatar's defence too, they are doing a shed load of testing as well. And I think that's their thing. Obviously in Qatar, there are a lot of people living in close proximity in, you know, apartments and campsites and et cetera. So, yeah, I guess I'm thinking of it at the other end now of how long this goes for. I think we're, you know, going to be safe to travel out of Australia, but it will just be where you're going next. So, anyone who's thinking about it, maybe the people that are posting on Facebook are thinking they're going home forever.
But that's not what it says. No. Like I'm looking for a house for a month in the UK. I was like, ooh, why would you do that when you have to spend two of those weeks inside the house in the UK? Yeah. Like, well, sure, look for a good house. And then you get 2 weeks of like being outside if you want to be and seeing people maybe. If you can, depending on what restrictions are in place, and then you have to go back to where you're from.
Is this one of those situations, Nikki, it's thinking about the difference of where you are to where someone else is? So you're in lovely Hamburg for the summer and you will get summer.
As long as it stays lovely, that's fine. So maybe. Doesn't happen every year.
Maybe if you were somewhere isolated or unbearably hot or somewhere where there's usually like a mass sort of exodus at summer or whatever, and you wanted to get back to the UK. Because, I mean, I have lived in places where I've thought about, you know, you're living for that yearly trip home. And is it that you're like, yeah, well, 2 weeks in isolation will be just exactly what I'm living now, do you know, in my compound or in my whatever, and I'm willing
You're right, Kirsty. You're right. And, you know, the voice of reason. Here's me being all, what are these people doing? And here's Kirsty giving us the voice of reason about, sure, that's fine. And I was actually thinking that because I was thinking, you know, not being able to go home to Australia at the moment makes me want to go home and think about, should we go home for Christmas, you know, because of this year we're having. And then if we had to go home at Christmas and then do 2 weeks isolation because we're coming from Europe, which will no doubt be, you know, not, you know, we'll see how it goes by the end of the year. I was thinking, is it worth it for a 3-week trip? Maybe. If we have a house on the beach and you know, there's a pool and, you know, like if I can sit outside in the sunshine and if, you know, my brother and my dad can drop stuff over and sit like over the fence and we can chat and, you know, and bring me, you know, a cheesy might scroll every morning, you know, maybe it's worth it. So, okay.
If so, I'm going.
But I'm just saying I did have that thought and I went through that process. So I you know, and it's one of these, you know, the I get sick of seeing it, but it is true. And I know everyone that posted it is only seeing it for the first time. Is it, you know, my COVID journey is not your COVID journey and we are going through this very differently and we are all experiencing it differently. And as you and I have said before, we're experiencing it at the height of privilege, even though we have other tricky issues on top of it. We are still in amazingly privileged situations compared to a lot of other people. So that is why people are thinking they can post and they might go home. Yep. So that's that, I guess. So, Kirsty, just on maybe a little bit more of a serious note and perhaps a non-COVID note for today, can you be an expat in a location where you don't agree with the government and not be a hypocrite?
I hope so, because how does anything ever change in the world? I always think I've got a very good friend who really is not a big fan of I'm going to narrow it down because I don't want to insult anyone. He's not a big fan of one of the places I've lived, or perhaps it's even the place I'm currently living in. And he has very, very strong opinions of that particular country and how they treat their people. And I am desperate for him.
Side note, has he been there?
No, of course not. I'm desperate for him to go there to have a look, to sort of so he can think, you know, see the confusion about it. But I think, you know, if we were to say, look, you know, you can't live there because you don't agree with that country's politics, and so you're a hypocrite if you go there and you live there and you get paid there, that's a very, you know, that's the same as saying, well, you can't ever go to a Catholic church if you're a Lutheran or a Methodist, or, you know, you can't, you know, where do you then draw the line of anything? You can't have your Jewish friends over for dinner because you're a hypocrite because you don't agree with their, you know, religious cultural views. Yeah, no, I hope not. I think maybe it's your job when you're there, if you really disagree with it, to try and immerse yourself in the culture and understand it and work with it.
Yeah, I think it's half the listening and the experience of it, because there are a lot of people who say, no, that's a bit of a broad brush, but there are people who write and speak and, as you say, hold very strong opinions and always bring up, well, what about how this country treats people? And, you know, this country doesn't allow homosexuality and you've lived there and et cetera, et cetera. And you think, okay, that's true, but, you know, so sometimes you look at your own country. Sometimes your own country isn't doing everything you agree with, but you, in their policies, even though they appear to be quite a free and democratic society, but there might be government policies in place that you don't necessarily agree with. Australia was one of the last countries, the last Western/progressive first world countries to, you know, legalize gay marriage. And that was something that I thought, you know, should have been in place earlier. Yet I didn't say living in Australia is hypocritical because I believe in gay marriage and Australia doesn't have it passed as a law. Mm-hmm. I think that there are situations where But what I mean is, if you don't live there and you don't experience it, then you can't advocate for or against it. It's very easy to sit somewhere else and say and spout off opinions and ideas. I do it all the time about places that you've never been. But it's harder when you have lived there and you know the people and you see what happens and you see, like, I you know, South Africa was a very complicated country for me for a lot of reasons, but I see that it's a more complex problem than people who aren't there state in you know, blanket and motherhood statements. And that's probably one of the most complex, you know, probably the most complex place that I've lived in terms of that kind of thing. And so I think that, you know, I think probably I would say hypocrite. It's a harsh word. We have a special hypocrite dance in our house whenever I say something that the kids say, but that's not what you said the other day, hypocrite. And they do a little dance around me. And so I think that you probably on one level are, but it's not with bad intentions or bad meanings. It's with the best of intentions.
The thing about being an expat is you haven't immigrated. You're there for a short period of time. And so one of the things that's difficult with that is you stay in that time frame of that short period of time too. So you may have been there 10 years ago when this was like this and you don't witness the change. So, you know, one of the things of being in Qatar, when we got there 10 years ago, the road rules were just abysmal. And people used to get very tutty about, you know, children not in proper safety seats or not wearing seatbelts. And I can remember thinking, I grew up in the country in Australia where my parents came home from the hospital with me in one of those baskets, you know, that just sat on the back seat. And, you know, we grew up, my parents never wore a seatbelt. They drove quite often after they'd had several drinks at a party. My dad smoked in the car with the window down and we all bounced around in the back seat, you know, singing songs and doing whatever and playing games.
Obviously not saying click, clack, front and back.
And then, you know, you get to Qatar and you see there are children standing in the back seat with their head through the sunroof as they drive at 100 km an hour. But that has changed in Qatar in those 10 years. Now, if I had left Qatar, you know, 6 years ago, I would have said, oh, you know, terrible how this all happens and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't have seen that there has now been a mad change with road safety and what police will, you know, fine you for, and that there has been a whole education in road rules. And, you know, a lot of stuff gets said about the Middle East and our rules around homosexuality. But what people forget is there have been kings in Middle Eastern kingdoms who have been openly homosexual. And, you know, that people who ran very peaceful countries, there have been sons of people that have stood up and said, well, you better not pick me. You better pick child number three because I'm never going to give you the heirs and the spares. But the way they go about things, maybe in a, you know, maybe it's just going to take more time. Maybe you need to be immersed in the culture to really understand, do you know? And I think unless you're living there, part of it, working with it, do you know, we are mere visitors. You know, Nikki, quite often when people say, oh, you can't be an expat there because you don't believe in whatever and you're a hypocrite, I often think of the 10 years that we avoided moving to the US because I had very fixed ideas about what it was going to be like to live in Texas. And I still say now that living in Texas and living in Houston was one of the best locations that we had because it was such an easy life and we met such fabulous people and it was just a really beautiful time in our lives. Now, that more for me that I had very fixed ideas about what life in the South was going to be like, and it wasn't like that at all. So, no, maybe we should be encouraging people who have very different ideologies than, you know, the government of the country that they're looking at. Maybe we should encourage them, hey, you should go live there for a while. see how you feel about it. See if you can learn why.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So, and that's the other thing is that having conversations, I don't know whether you do, but I have conversations with family members about sweeping generalizations about countries I've lived in and their view on that, and me just saying that's just not what happens there. And they're saying, no, it is. And I just get so frustrated. They say, just because you've lived in all these countries doesn't mean you get to say it. I'm like, I'm just sharing my experience. And that is like shared experience. I'm not professing to know everything, but I'm professing to know what happened.
Okay. Nikki Moffitt, give me your three favorite things. What are they?
Okay. So two podcasts this week for me. One is, I'm sure I'm not telling anyone anything new because it was the most listened podcast in many, many Apple charts last week, Grounded with Louis Theroux. And the first episode is him talking, and it's a podcast he's doing for the BBC. And, you know, now he's in quarantine/isolation/social distancing land. He's got time to talk to a lot of people he's always wanted to talk to and had lengthy conversations with. So is it just like any other podcast where there's a celebrity talking to other celebrities? Yes. Is it interesting? Because I've thought about that a lot because I've listened to some of the Dax Shepard ones and some of the other people who just, and they talk to a lot of the same people, et cetera. But I think if you like the person who's doing the podcast, then you're going to listen. So I'm a big Louis Theroux fan, and in this one, he spoke to John Ronson, who wrote one of your favorite books, Kirsty. So you've been publicly shamed. And the two of them are just so interesting. And an hour just whizzed by. Like, I didn't even, it was an hour, Kirsty, just so you know, it was an hour. And
warning.
I know, you think that's too long for a podcast, and it just whizzed by, and I really enjoyed it. He did one with Boy George, so it was the second one, and I listened to it. I didn't like it as much. I was like, the first one I was sort of more sitting listening, the second one I was sort of up and around and doing things, and you know, sometimes when you do that you sort of tune out from time to time. So I think it always depends on the person they speak to, but big fan. The other podcast I listen to, which maybe people know about, maybe they don't, is something called You'll Do, which is another English podcast. I'm really into English podcasts at the moment. I just think English people sound quite calm and reassuring, really, in the scheme of things. And it's two comedians. They're a real-life couple, Catherine Bohart and Sarah Keyworth. And they want to know what makes relationships work. And what drew me to it was that they drew me to this particular episode I listened to was that they had Deborah Frances White from The Guilty Feminist, which is a podcast that I do enjoy listening to, and her husband Tom Selinsky in an episode. And they talked about their relationship. And so I'm really fascinated by Deborah Frances White because she says she's Australian, but she sounds as British as British as British. And she talks about growing up in a cult all the time and all this kind of stuff that she, so I'm fascinated by her. And I thought I was interested in getting an insight into her personal life, which is a bit rude and voyeuristic.
Four voices on a podcast is a lot. Like, is there a lot of jumping in over the top, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's a really good point. No, there isn't. So at the beginning, the two comedians talk to each other and they do some things for the week, like things you made me feel this week. You know, you made me feel sexy when you did this. You made me feel left out when you did this. And they sort of have this backwards and forwards where they do three really revealing, deep, uncomfortable questions about their relationship, and the idea is to let the people who they go to then ask questions about their relationship to see sort of them be quite exposed. And then so that's them talking to each other, and then they ask a set of questions to the couple. So it's usually just one person sort of talking to interview the couple. And then I don't know, it wasn't, you're right, four voices on a podcast is a lot, but it really worked quite well, because then they go into the interview. So they do themselves and then they go into the interview. And then, you know, you hear the laughter or the throwaway comment at the end of a question, at the end of an answer, I should say. But there's not all this sort of four people trying to talk at once. That's not what happens. They've obviously got quite a good process and some effective show notes or running sheets that they're working from. Anyway, I really enjoyed that episode, and I'll put the link up in the show notes. Okay, and so my last one is Normal People, yes. Which if after listening to all these British podcasts, you can't listen to a British podcast without hearing them talk about yes. Normal People. So I had not read the book by Sally Rooney. Have you read the book?
I haven't, but it's on my list of books because it seemed to be at about Christmas time everybody was reading Normal People.
Yeah, so there was a big thing and I thought, oh, I should add that to the list. And then the show came out. I thought, oh, well, I'll just watch the show.
Yeah.
And it actually is written by one of the writers and creators is Sally Rooney. So it does apparently align relatively closely to the book. Not exactly, but closely.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, if anyone has not read the book, do read the book. People talked about this like it was the most incredible, amazing thing. And
yeah, that's what I was keep
really
hearing.
Expected to be really wowed. And I think if you've read the book, you would probably like it more.
Right.
And I say that because although I love the two actors that play the main roles of Marianne and Connell are fantastic and I love what they do, but it's a teenage angst thing. So it's a relationship that's shown over the course of 5 years. So the last year of high school through to the last year of university. And it shows all the changes in the people. They're both quite damaged people and their relationship with each other and their relationship with other people. You know, they have this on again, off again. It reminded me a lot of my own early relationship with my husband. I'm thinking, oh, they break up all the time. I'm thinking, actually, yeah, so did we. So it's not, we're not anywhere like them, but it was sort of like a familiar pattern to me.
Yeah.
And why teenagers break up and, you know, silly reasons. But I feel like there was a lot of just every episode they're either breaking up or getting back together and you just wanted them to be together. Like the writing was so that you just wanted them to be together and you wanted them to realize, but then you realize that if they were together and happy, then there's no point to keep going with the story.
Yeah.
But that'd be like the end. But I think if you read the book, it's more about what's going on in their head. That's in a review that I read. It's more about what's going on in their head. So there's only so much you can get by seeing it from the outside.
Mm.
Like, you know, and teenagers, they're not really evolved adults. So they're not having sort of deep and lengthy discussions on their feelings.
Right.
You know, I like you. When you said you like me, did you mean like really like me or
like me?
What kind of like? Yeah. You know, and, but that is realistically a teenage conversation, but it's, doesn't give you a lot when you're watching it from that point of view.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I have watched the whole thing and I did really enjoy it and I did cry, but you know, mental state this week is not that great.
So yeah, look, I have heard people rave about this, but at the same time I've also heard this other conversation about this with people being amazed that she has pubic hair in the thing. Have you heard this? I couldn't believe it. I was listening to a different podcast during the week and someone was talking about it, but they were talking about – it must have been like a Mamma Mia podcast for that to be the conversation. Yeah. But it was and it was quite interesting because they were talking about the different forms of, for want of a better term, you know, maintenance down there over the years and what's going on in movies and what young people see and what they're used to seeing. And so supposedly, Nikki, there's been several different forms of waxing and lasering that have happened over the last sort of 30 years. And if you're, you know, someone like us who, you know, went, you know, we're probably more 90, we were in our 20s in the 90s, of that, you know, it was that maybe there were people getting a little bit of a tidy up, but that was kind of it. And then we moved into the Brazilian where people had the sort of landing strip, and then we moved into the Hollywood where people just got rid of the whole lot. And unfortunately I've missed a bit. I think there was a bit of vajazzling somewhere, vajazzling in there.
I think that's vajazzling. Called vajazzling.
Yeah. But there was a bit of vajazzling, and then supposedly, if you believe what we're being told, is that now people are seriously thinking about getting pubic hair transplants because they've lasered it all off, and that was one of the conversations, was that this actress in it pops up and she has pubic hair and it's caused a sensation because
I just assumed it was a merkin.
Yeah.
That was my first assumption. I went, goodness, that's a lot of pubic hair. Oh, yeah, it's a merkin. Right. Like that is just what came to mind immediately when I saw it.
Oh, look, we could go on about this. Well, I could go on about this for a long time because I get so discouraged because I have teenagers. I get really worried about the lack of hair on anyone. It's not just the girls. It's, you know, that they have this whole hair has become the devil's work in this generation. You know, they just can't deal with it at all. They think that everybody's completely hairless and should be completely hairless, you know, and it's a concern. But I think that's interesting, you know, with the merkin. And for those that don't know, we're not talking about Americans. We're talking about merkins things that are used to cover up bits and pieces in movies. Okay, I don't know how I always be the one that brings a conversation down, but it does tend to be me, doesn't it?
But I just would like to say one last thing is that, and I don't know if you heard this in any of the podcasts that you listen to, but someone that I listened to did point out a really good thing. Early in the series, there is the episode where they first have sex together, and it is a really, someone said it's a really good basis or template for consent.
Ah.
And so the way that they do it and how they have sex and the conversation that they have while it's happening and what he says to her, even though he's a man of very few words, a boy of few words, it is very good template for consent. So it's not something that I maybe would watch with my kids. It's a little bit uncomfortable maybe at that point. And it's like the other night my son wanted to play Cards Against Humanity, like in family game night. And I said, it's like watching a porno with your parents. You just don't do it. Yeah. Like you just, it's just somewhere you draw the line and that's where we're drawing the line there. And so I don't know whether my kids would feel, I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable about them feeling comfortable with me watching this scene. But having said that, if you have teenagers, I think it is probably a good model for consent as well. And just their sexual relationship the whole way, the way they interact. And she has some other ones which are a little bit more damaging, but theirs is always very, not pure, but it's just very mutual consensually. Yes. And I think that that's a great model. So it's not a show that is like modeling any bad behavior for teenagers in my mind. Anyway, I would recommend to watch it. I had to watch it because of everything I heard about it. I would recommend it, but I would still think if you've read the book, you probably get more out of it because I didn't know what was going on sometimes in their heads. What about you, Kirsty? What are you watching, seeing,
I mentioned to you, I think, in our Facebook Live on Friday that I was going to watch Trying because it had dropped on Friday, which is the British Apple TV series that's come out about the young couple who are trying to have a baby and then they find out that it's really not going to happen for them and that they have to adopt. I think I've rolled 5 episodes and there might be 6. Look, it's very light. I'm very surprised. It's very, very light. So if you're feeling a bit corona overwhelmed, it's easy. It's easy and light and bright and they're funny, it's comedic, it's got that kind of Notting Hill, you know, they live in near the Camden Markets. It's, you know, lovely London, you know, sort of that sort of feel to it. I do you know, there are a lot of scenes where I think, oh, I feel like I've seen this before. Do you know that this has been borrowed from something else? It's not, it's good, it's easy, but it's not like, gee, this is great writing. It's just if you wanted to sit down and have, you know, easy peasy telly, it's it. One of the other things I listened to this week that I really enjoyed, it was Malcolm Turnbull, our ex-PM, former PM, was interviewed on No Filter. And he's been interviewed on No Filter before, but this bit was more, I guess, because his book is out and he's promoting his book, which is really an interesting thing too, that he has released his book in the middle of, you know, corona, where most people have held off on releasing their books because they can't do those interviews and they can't get out on book tour. Yeah. But he has chosen to, and he has sold a lot of books.
I guess also he does have like the name recognition. I think for other authors it might be a bit more tricky, but he's got like a universal name recognition in Australia. Like there are reasons that people would be interested.
That's true, but he's also sold a lot more books than other PMs that have released their memoirs. This is what's interesting. So right. He's done it in this particular time and sold more than the Kevin Rudds and the Julia Gillards of the world. Do you know he's done very well. I think I am actually going to download the audio because I got the
Got
the tip in this interview that he evidently does because Malcolm Turnbull obviously reads it, but he evidently does a fabulous Christopher Pine impersonation. Now, if you're not Australian, that would mean nothing to you, but we have a very flamboyant Polly in South Australia who has an accent like no other. And I can't wait to hear our former PM actually impersonate him. I think that could be really fun. Okay, so the other thing podcast I've been listening to is Mindfully, and it comes under the ABC podcast umbrella. And they've been a bit clever in that they had a first season which just had its normal names. Now they've upgraded the second season so that it's a corona mindful sort of podcast to in corona times, which probably gets them a few more clicks. But it's, I really like it. So they have anything from soothing the anxious mind to 5 minutes of calm, the unwind before bed. But they've got one that you can do with your family. I listened to the family one and thought, I would not be doing this with my family because my family would be giggling on the floor while they told us all, you know, to concentrate on our buttocks against the chair or our whatever. But I definitely enjoy it. But it led me to the Smiling Mind app because while this is done by the ABC, it's actually sources all of its material from the Smiling Mind app, which is a lovely way to download it on your phone and make sure that you are practicing mindfulness. Because one of the things that I need to practice on with mindfulness is mindful eating in this time of corona, because there's a lot of non-mindful eating that's going on. I've really liked it. And the last thing I was going to talk about that I have really enjoyed was on just last night. And it's an insight into the health system in Australia and how doctors and medical staff have dealt with corona. It's called Flattening the Curve. It's from Four Corners, which is on the ABC. So you'll find it on ABC iView. I thought this was really well produced. There's no journalist voice. It's just the voices and recordings of medical staff who kind of walk you through their stories. Now, it starts sometime early March, I want to say around March 13, and it walks its way up to May the 4th. And so when it starts in March, and I guess too, Nikki, because I arrived back in Australia right when they're starting this, and you can really see the fear on these doctors' faces and just the realization of what they're facing and just that overwhelming similarity between all of them, because they cross over a few different states, was I'm not worried about me, I'm more worried about my family. And that there's one doctor who said, you know, I woke up one night and I thought, I didn't sign up for this. And then I thought, yes, you did. You took the oath. You did sign up for this. That's what that was. It's a good, because enjoyed seeing, because you know how it ends, right? When you know you're getting up to May 4th, because there's all this horror at the beginning of, you know, because on, you know, I think when it starts, they've had 490 cases overnight. And then by the time it's finishing, we're down to, you know, there have been 20 cases in the new cases. Yeah. But it's a good message of hope. And I think at the end, it kind of ends with one of the doctors who was really particularly worried at the beginning saying, you know, we haven't got out of this. We still need to get through the winter, and we know that this is going to blow up again. But the difference is we are now fully prepared. We're all set up and we're ready for it, because they've had that window where things were a little scary at the beginning and things were moving quickly. And then they did. They worried about masks and they worried about gloves and they worried about all those things, hand sanitizer, et cetera. But because they've got under control, they're now ready for the next bit that's coming. So, yeah, they were my things.
Excellent. Well, that sounds quite good, actually. And I have enjoyed shows and podcasts that I've listened to that have just been sort of recordings of healthcare workers because it really gives you their point of view, like the viewpoint from the people who are actually doing it rather than all us armchair epidemiologists and everything you can see or read.
And also you don't get the hype because if you don't have the journalist, you don't have the, but little did they know, tomorrow there was going to be 10 new cases that exploded in whatever. Do you know, like you just have health professionals, nurses, doctors, psychiatrists, you know, people who are trained to give you the information via fact and calmly. And, yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Well, good chat, Kirsty. It's been lovely to see you and to chat with you. And we'll do
it. Now, Nikki, with your work commitment this week, are you going to be able to do a Facebook Live or are you working on Friday?
I am working on Friday, but I can change my hours, so I will be able to do a Facebook Live, but I will be strict on the timing, Kirsty. If you say we're doing it for 30 minutes, then we'll do it for 30 minutes.
Brilliant. That's good. All right, Nikki. Well, I look forward to having a glass of champagne while you have a cup of coffee on Friday.
That's all right, yeah. Okay. Nikki,
all right. It was lovely to talk to you again and I'll see you on Friday.
Okay, bye-bye.